tonight's main speaker comes to us from Eastside AA. It is Ben J.
Good evening. Can everyone hear me? All right, my name is Ben. I'm an alcoholic. So I have a sobriety date. It's 4/21 of 2018. I have a sponsor. He knows he's my sponsor. I sponsor men, and I have a home group. I'm a proud participant in this fellowship. I have a lot of gratitude for everything this place has done for me. So I guess, I refer to myself as an alcoholic out of respect for this fellowship. My story has a lot to do with outside issues, right? A lot of other chemicals, a lot of cross addiction. I grew up in an alcoholic family, and that's one reason I never really wanted to be an alcoholic. How's that? All right. I spent a lot of time in the street as a kid. I was a runaway. From there, I got into a lot of criminal stuff. And it really kind of formed, my main identity as a young man and kind of who I thought I was. Set me up for a lot of, bad habits in life. And, from there started drug use, right? Criminal activity, mainly selling dope. It did a lot for me, right? It served a main purpose. It kept me safe, gave me things to do. And it worked for a long time, right? I guess none of this stuff really matters, though, right? Because, at this time in my life, I was still using, I thought, because I wanted to. I guess I caught a couple of cases as a young adult, ended up doing a couple of stretches. And, all this time, I still thought that all these problems were exterior. It was all out there. I never really wanted to get sober at that point. What ended up happening was, after I got out of prison the last time, I met this girl, right? We were dating. I had caught another case, and they had given me my last attempt at probation. And, we were still living our life. I was kind of still on my bullshit. And she ended up getting pregnant. That was my oldest daughter. Now, me being who I was and where I come from, growing up in the family that I grew up in, I didn't want to raise a kid in that kind of environment. It was one thing I just didn't want to do. So I stopped getting high. At least drugs, right? I continued to smoke weed, right? Started drinking a little bit, got a job. And I think that was my first real attempt at managing my addiction. I had no idea at the time. I just couldn't handle any more of the consequences, knowing I was dragging someone else through it. And I still had no idea how much trouble I was in. So, we ended up getting married, had a couple more kids, bought a house, worked a union gig for a while. Life was pretty good, and I hadn't done any real dope in years, right? Ended up leaving the union job, started a business. So I had all these things going on, right? Had the house and hot rods and cars, motorcycles and beautiful family, and it still wasn't enough. Still wasn't right. And, slowly drinking started. It started getting more and more important in my life. And I still had no idea really what alcoholism was. Because my experience up until then, I had You know, every time I started to become dependent on a chemical, I'd walk away, right? And go find another chemical that I could use safely in my life. You know, so I had this illusion of control, right? Every time something would become too important, I'd just stop doing that. And I'd go find another drug that was okay with me. So I had this illusion of control in my life, you know, and the thing with alcohol, what happened was eventually it got to be so bad that, you know, I just couldn't ingest it anymore. Physically, it was different, and I couldn't drink physically because my body was, like, refusing it. So, and I guess this is where it starts to become important, right? Because this is the beginning of the end. You know, this is when I decided to get high again. You know, I had no idea that how alcoholism works. I had no idea that, like, you know, that I have an allergy. And when I put alcohol or a drug in my body craves more. I had no understanding of, like, the spiritual malady of why I would choose to get high again, knowing what happens when I get high. You know, that nice house, family, the cars, knowing it's all going away. It was all going away, right? But the thing is, I couldn't drink enough to get myself right anymore. I didn't understand powerlessness, right? I didn't understand that I can't. Like, on my own power, I can't not drink. I can't not get high. If I'm left self-sufficient, I will revert to that. You know, so anyways, that's what happened. I got high again, right? Under the illusion that I'm going to be a social IV drug user. How does that work? Right? Yeah. Next thing you know, family's gone. It's all gone, right? This beautiful house is spray painted on the walls on the inside. And I'm insane again. Completely insane. You know, my ex-wife now, she's out too, you know, doing whatever she's doing. And it wasn't long, you know, I have these three kids. You know, it wasn't long, they were actually in the system. Right where I was, right? And that's how this whole thing started, was like, I don't want to put someone else through what I was through. You know, so I tried everything I could, trying to get clean at first, right? I was like, oh, I'm just going to stop. Okay, right? That works for a day or two. You know? And then I decided, well, I guess I don't want to stop, right? Every time I go through this, I like decide, oh, I just changed my mind, right? And that's the delusion of this disease. And I can't really see that when I'm in the middle of it, right? You know, I actually flew down to Mexico and went and did a bunch of, like, ayahuasca, smoked DMT, right, with a witch doctor, and this idea that I could, like, cure my alcoholism, right? And that worked, you know, about 10 days. You know, I didn't get high again, though, right? I came home, and next thing you know, I'm sitting there in my house with a bottle of single malt. But I chose to do that, right? I chose to do it. You know, so eventually I end up in treatment. That's how it works. And, you know, what I got from that is I got 30 days. It really helped me. I had a counselor who used to let go, and he'd look around, and he'd shut the door, and he'd pull out a big book. Right? He'd be like, here, let me show you something. You know? Because he wasn't supposed to be talking about it. This guy named Scott. You know, I still keep in touch with him. He's been great. But the thing is, you know, after that 30-day sober, after that 30-day treatment center, I came out, and I thought I was going to do everything I thought I had to do, right? Because they said go to AA. So I did. I went to AA, you know. Did the best I could. You know, I went there, and I drank the coffee, and I talked to the girls, right? And I did the fellowship, I did 90 and 90. You know, and I had removed the drugs, and I was just telling myself it's going to be okay, right? It's going to be fine. I still didn't do any of this. Didn't touch this. I made about 14 months. 14 months in, I was suicidal. And it was weird because, like, you know, I had put the life back together, right? I had the new house, bought myself a new car, you know. I had the kids back, right? I had the kids back. They're out of CPS. Everything was fine. And I remember the day I realized that I wasn't going to make it. That was a scary day. You know, because I thought I was doing everything I was supposed to be doing. And it was funny, you know, that I had spent 14 months in AA and still had never been exposed to the truth. Right? So it's important, like, as working members of this fellowship, we got to be conscious, like, what kind of message are we carrying here? Right? Am I showing up at a meeting and talking about my opinion on the step work? Or am I talking about my experience? You know, the thing is, like, for me that day, I got high again. I remember very clearly, right? I remember sitting there. I had this bar top in my kitchen and a stool. Like I said, I was an IV drug user. I remember making up a shot, setting it on the counter, and looking at it for like 10 hours. Because I knew I didn't have another day. I wasn't going to make it through the day, right? I was going to get high. But once more, I knew that as soon as I did that, this is all going away again. You know? So the thing is, I still had no idea about why I was using. I just knew that I couldn't make it. I didn't really feel like there was any hope for me. I had seen people in the rooms of these meetings that I had been to. I knew that they were living differently than I was. I knew it. Because they were happy and I wasn't. So I did. I used again. And, you know, the chemicals that I used, I mean, it might be a month, it might be 6 months before you catch another lucid thought, right? Because once I'm on a bender, who knows what the hell is going to happen. You know, that's that allergy we're talking about, right? So, something really weird happened, man. It was, And now I see it for what it was, that it was God. Right? I was out there on the streets running around, ended up getting the flu. And I was sick, like really, really sick. I ended up on the couch at some trap house. Like almost, I guarantee I ruined that couch. I was so sick, you know? And it was weird, you know, someone who was known for just being a kind of a POS, right? Actually, literally, like, just kind of took care of me. While I was sick, you know, stopped in, brought me Gatorades, made sure I'd eaten, you know, showed caring, like actual humanity, which I don't know if you guys know anything about dope world, right? That's not a very common thing out there. You know, so what ended up happening to me was, you know, I got, you know, here's the thing, man, like by now I'm not just using like those chemicals, I'm also like opium dependent, I got other stuff going on, right? Sick. And I remember waking up after having the flu, and I had been sick for like 10 days, and I realized that I hadn't gotten high in 10 days. And I was clean, like physically clean. And I had known that I was done, right? Because something happens, you know, when we're out there, there comes a point where drugs don't work anymore. Or alcohol doesn't work anymore, right? Where I don't get any kind of that spiritual relief that I got from it initially when I started using it, right? what I had to learn was this, is that, you know, there was a time alcohol and drugs really helped. It did. But there was also a time when it stopped working, and I continued to use it thinking it's going to work. What I had to understand was that at that point, I didn't know it, but I was using it against my will. Right? Thinking that maybe it's going to work this time, maybe it's going to change how I feel, maybe it's not going to affect me this time, maybe I'm not going to lose everything. All the different lies I've told myself over the years, right? So anyways, like I said, you know, I had known that I was done. I was done. There was just nothing left. There wasn't enough drugs. There wasn't enough women. There wasn't enough entertainment. It just didn't work. And when I found out that I was clean that day, I was just like, I'm done. And it was funny because I was over on the north side, right? And it was a weekend of Gopher State. I knew it, right? Because it was Memorial Day weekend, right? Or Labor Day weekend, whatever. And I was like, hey, Saturday is a holiday weekend. And I was like, I knew Gopher State was going on. And I knew my guys were down there too. Some people that I had known. I remember I stole this little BMX bike. And I rode that shit all the way down there, man. I did, I swear to God. You know, I left it right at the front door. Picked up someone's name tag off the ground. Put it on backwards, right? So it didn't say anything. Went right into the hospitality suites, and I ate for the first time in a long time, right? And it was funny because I'd been there probably an hour or two. You know they do that big thing on Saturday, right, where they count down the time backwards, right? And I came in that room, and I knew where my old sponsor was, right, this guy. And I walked right up front, and I found him, and I was just like, what the hell? He looked at me, and he goes, I thought you were dead. You know, it was strange because I said, listen, here's what I'm going to do. And he didn't roll his eyes or nothing. I said, I'm going to move into sober living. I'm going to get sober. And I'm going to do the steps. And, you know, the funny thing is that he's not the one who ended up taking me through the work. Because we had been on this cycle, right? I'd tell him something. Wouldn't follow through. And it was weird because, you know, he recommended, he said, listen, he said, you need to find someone else to sponsor you. So I love you like a brother, but I'm not going to do this anymore. And I went to another meeting that night. It was the strangest thing. And this is kind of how God works, right? Because the time I came in, it was just different. I just had this willingness. Well, I was like, ready to do whatever. You know, and like I said, I had been exposed to enough AA. I had heard enough of the cliches. I had heard enough people say things, right? That there's success in certain things. And I showed up at this meeting called Jaywalkers in St. Paul. It's a big meeting, right? There's like 100 people there. And the guy's like, who's running it, he's like, my service commitment is up. I need someone else to take over this meeting. He said that during the thing. I paid attention. I didn't really pay any attention. I'm walking down the stairs at the end of the meeting. There's no one else around. And it's only this guy there. He goes, listen. He goes, will you chair this meeting? No one else showed up. And I said, sure. First time ever being there, right? I have no idea what I'm doing. You know, he goes, here's what we do. And here's the thing, right? Like, that service commitment that I picked up that first night went for 13 weeks. Now, looking back, it's just a short amount of time. But for a guy coming in on 17 days, 13 days seems like a lifetime, right? 13 weeks seems like a lifetime. And it was just this little bit of accountability that I needed. I went to fellowship after that meeting. There was one guy I knew there who was in the work, and I asked him to sponsor me. You know what, man? And it was like, I just walked up to him after. I said, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm going to die. Because I was, man. I was like, you know, you hear people say, oh, I'm going to die. Like, nah, man. Like, it was the end of the road. And I knew this. You know what? We had like a 15-minute phone conversation the next day. Talked about what was going on with me, you know, and I was like, hey, man, here's what's up. You know, I got all this weird stuff towards God. I was blocked, right? All this stuff. Like, you know, people start talking to me about God, and I just get so uncomfortable. I'm like, I just want to quit shooting dope, right? At this point, this is all I need. People start talking to me about God, and the funny thing is like, he didn't do that. He just asked me if I was willing to do something different. Are you willing to do the work? I said, yeah, let's go. We met in the backyard of the Midway Club a couple days later. And you know what, man? He took me right to page 62 of the big book. Right? And it's weird because I'd been looking at these steps on the wall. I'd been so hung up. All this God stuff. Like, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over the care of God as we understood him. Now, a man like me, in the situation I've been in, I have no idea about God. And what does he care about me, right? But the thing is like, I was proposed a completely different idea out of this book. We start talking about selfishness. We start talking about my shit. And there's a lot of it. Right? Start talking about the actor. Start talking about how it says in here, selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Start talking, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. So sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that sometime in the past we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So now we're talking about resentments. Right? We're talking about my case. We're talking about every reason I have to use. All this stuff. You know, it's weird because it was like this idea that I had in the back of my head for years and years. I just couldn't put my finger on it, right? Because I knew I was fucked. I knew it. It was evident, right? Everything I touched turned to shit. It was all on fire, you know? The weird thing is that every time it was on fire, I was at peace. I couldn't understand that. But now we're talking about this, right? That I'm the problem. I'll tell you what, man. What was proposed to me that day was a lot different than what I had seen on that poster at every meeting I ever sat through. Because I couldn't understand that. That's not enough information for me. Right? But you know, we talked about it that day. And, you know, that day it wasn't just like, well, we're going to give our will over to God. We'll wake up in the morning and ask him what he wants us to have for breakfast. No, man. Like, you know what? I was asked to put my feet in gear that day. Right? Because if selfishness has been the problem, right, then my job is to reverse that selfishness and just find out where I can contribute, where I can be helpful. If that's been the problem, let's get busy on the solution. And that was something I had never really been presented before. Right? Because, like, I had always thought that this was like some sort of a passive thing. It's not. You know, we get our feet moving. I can't act my way into right living. I can't outthink this shit, right? Because, you know, here's the thing, man. I've learned, like, it doesn't really matter what I think or what I believe. If I'm willing to do it, I can have it. You know, so for me, at first, that was just really like a kind of a social experiment. I decided I'm going to start this thing, you know? It was weird because I'm like living in a sober house and I'm working some shitty job, right? Like for like no money. But I had enough. I had enough to cover it. And things started changing. I said, you know what? I'm going to push the positivity in my life, right? I've been feeding enough negativity in this shit. What happens when I do start figuring out where I can be helpful? Where can I contribute? Just this general idea changed the whole perspective of my whole life, you know? And the funny thing is that little bit of success, right? That little bit of like just that temperature change in my life motivated me to get going on inventory. You know, because that fourth step can be a scary thing. All right? There comes a point when we're writing inventory where we're asked, point blank, right? Is this my shit or is this the world? You know? That's a big act of faith. You know, but here's the thing. You know, we don't come in and we don't, like, decide, hey, you know what I want to do is I want to take responsibility. You know, we do this thing when we have to, when we don't have another choice. You know? So, you know, that first inventory we did, right, the resentment piece. I remember when we came to that fourth column, right, when he says, he says we resolutely look for our own mistakes. You know, where have we been selfish, dishonest, right? And I remember sitting there and looking at that paper, man, first time I was writing, and I was just like, can't believe I'm going to do this shit. All right. So anyways, committed to it. We did it. We followed through, right? Big things started to change. I remember I was so scared about doing this fifth step thing. And, you know, I remember that, you know, he'd been helping me write inventory this whole time. And I was like, when are we going to do this fifth step? He's like, it's pretty much done, dude. You got anything else you want to add to it? And one thing that was different about this was, like, you know, I wasn't handed a notebook and said, go write inventory. I was showed this thing, right? I was shown it. Like, this is how the tool works. So I came out of that with a good understanding about, like, why am I doing what I'm doing? And that's why I can't say enough about good sponsorship, right? Because I can't interpret this book on my own. And I can't put that thing into action on my own. You know? I remember coming through that stuff. I remember, you know, probably a little over a year sober, man, and the kids came home again the last time. And that was crazy because, you know, that's just like how this whole thing started, right? You know, because by now, I mean, like, you know, my ex-wife is completely out of the picture, right? Now she's sitting in federal prison. But you know what, man? Like, here's the thing. Like, I had to, like, show up as a father, right? And that's all I really wanted from the first time. And without this program, there's no way I could have done that. There's no way. You know, because this program brought me into another fellowship, right? It brought me into Al-Anon. Because, like, here's the thing. Now I know as a sober alcoholic, like, 99% of my problems are Al-Anon related. Right? Just the real, like, the black belt, you know? But you know, here's the deal, man. And like, as we come into this stuff and I start to see, like, okay, like, I can either live in this program, right, or I can eventually just cycle back out. And life, you know, it gets big, right? Because here's the thing. During that time, I was, like, starting a business, and I was, you know, in a little bit of a dysfunctional relationship, and I had these three kids, teenagers, right, and middle daughter struggling with an eating disorder and self-harm and all this stuff. And there's a lot of excuses not to show up, right, to get my ass back in the chair. Once more, I got to say, man, thank God for good sponsorship because I was presented with the truth, right? That either we commit to this life or we can cycle out and come back. You know? So I guess overall what happened is, you know, COVID stuff happened, right? I remember that. That was brutal. A lot of us didn't come back after that shit. You know, me and my guys, we doubled down. We got the keys to a couple of clubs, you know, and we just started some. That's really when our home club kind of took off. 1099 Payne Ave over on the east side. We started up a new meeting rotation, and it was great because, you know, that's when I was, like, really given the opportunity to be helpful, right, and help the new guy coming in. Started working with a couple of new guys. And, you know, like, here's the thing, man. Like, there's nothing like, as far as like understanding the mechanics of the step work, right? When you start to look at this book upside down and read it upside down and talking someone else through it, it's, you know, it's the first time I really understood it. I mean, because I had been through it, right? I'd been through it with the sponsor. And I saw the experience I had. But when you start to sit there and watch a guy from the 50-yard line and watch his life come back together, right? And we're reading through this thing, watch his life change. So I got to say, man, that's, you know, it's the first time I ever felt like I really had sustainable sobriety. You know? Today, it's, life is life, right? I work hard. I spend a lot of time in these rooms. Spend as much time as I can with those kids. They're young adults now. You know, and they're doing well. I'm so happy, you know. I'm still falling short. Still make mistakes. Still applying these steps. Right? The thing is, though, is like, you know, like the step work has given me like a way to deal with my problems. You know, I don't necessarily have to just explain myself and make it worse anymore, even though I still do sometimes, right? I'm still, you know, I'm still prone to make mistakes, you know. The thing is like, you know, eventually now, I mean, due to like some inventory and stuff like that, you know, I can come to the truth. I can come to the truth, and I can come to, you know, what needs to be done in order to clean it up. Right? You know, like I said, man, I got a lot of gratitude for this fellowship. It's given me a life that I couldn't even understand. I can't even comprehend it still. You know, I got real stability in life. I got people around me that really care about me. You know, most of my life has been, you know, life has been some sort of a competition, right? So, like I said, I'm just glad to be here, right? And thanks for having me here. I'm gonna pass.